Okay. I want to welcome everybody to tonight's Pharmacy Development Services Business Development Call for October. We have a very special guest, and we have opened up tonight's call to the entire industry of independent pharmacy because we have some great valuable information that we're going to share with you tonight. I want to introduce our special guest. Roxanne Emmerich is the author of the highly acclaimed new book, Thank God It's Monday, which is scheduled to be released next April. I want to tell you, she is one of the most requested speakers in the country and has spoken to over 1,100 audiences worldwide, and by far away is the leading expert in transforming cultures and performance of businesses that are in or want to be in the top 5%. You can visit her site. She set up a site for us, www.emmerichgroup.com. That's EMMERICH group.com/pharmacy. For more information on how you can begin your transformation and to subscribe to her Thank God It's Monday newsletter for ongoing strategies to transform your organization. So we've got a lot of great information. So Roxanne, welcome to our call. Thank you very much for being here with us.
Having me. It's great to be here.
I guess the best question to start off tonight's call is, what is a culture and does it matter?
Oh, that's a great question, because it's one of those words that just kind of sounds ambiguous, and it sounds like something that somebody should buy somewhere. But what it really is, you know, do you have people with a spirit of bring it on? As opposed to most organizations, if you look at the statistics, the amount of disengaged employees is just at a horrendous number and rapidly increasing. So a bring-it-on culture is something very different than those people who punch in at 9 o'clock, punch out at 5 o'clock, drive home, make dinner, watch television, go to sleep, wake up, punch in, do their job, go home, you know, make dinner, go to sleep, and are on that rote piece of not really understanding how to be a huge contributor to the world. And the reality is that culture in and of itself completely transforms both the bottom and the top line, and the amazing part about culture shifts is they can happen in a day.
All right. Well, that actually kind of leads into that next question I was going to ask you is culture really, really a bottom-line issue?
According to the Gallup organization, they did some research recently, they're saying an average company right now, for every $10,000 of payroll, loses $3,400 in lost productivity per that $10,000 of payroll due to what they call the disengaged employee. And so a disengaged employee is someone who, you know, does what they're told to do, and not a whole lot more. It's someone who, you know, works with their head, doesn't work with their heart, isn't doing backflips to wow your customers, help them buy more, ask more questions of them, see the mess and clean it up, see the light bulb out, step up and get that taken care of, think about what a display could be that would really make a difference. You know, someone who treats the business like it's their own business. And for so many business owners, and, you know, I'm in that category as well, it's so easy to give up just assuming it's impossible to have that kind of a culture. But it's not impossible at all. And, in fact, many of the organizations we work with were complete and total messes before we worked with them. And they said to me, surely if it works here, it'll work anywhere, because they had a whole lot of people who really had checked out, but they were close to retirement. No one wanted to get rid of them because they were afraid there would be lawsuits and all the messes. And what that's really all about is not only do the employees kind of give up on making a difference through their work, but the employers kind of give up, and they kind of go, well, that's just what we get, and that's how it's going to be, I guess. So there it is, and so that state of acceptance is the great enemy of both the top line and the bottom line.
Well, I see this I've seen this culture transformations really grow businesses from kind of from the inside out is a great way without without having to go out and pick up a lot of new business. Just the transformation that it's had on the business and the impact that it makes on the customers is profound, which is one of the reasons why we're so excited to have you here. But what I want to ask you, what are some of the myths about workplace motivation?
Great question. I remember doing my graduate work and hearing so many business principles that people just accepted, and I remember kind of going through some of that thinking, well, that doesn't sound right, and that doesn't sound right, and that doesn't sound right, and I wonder if anybody's applying this stuff in the real world. And unfortunately, you know, I have a sister who has a PhD and teaches at a college and teaches business. Of course, she's never had to make a payroll and never had to hire someone and never had to have the gut-wrenching decisions that a business owner makes on a daily basis. And, Danny, probably many of your listeners can relate to. I heard a story years ago, and I don't know if it's true, and I haven't been able to source it, even though I've been trying. If someone sources it, I'd sure love to hear. But somebody was telling me about a fighter pilot that was shot down during World War II, and the Nazis were looking for him, and there was a farm family who would let him sleep in the barn in the evening, and during the day they would bury him in the garden with a garden hose in his mouth, and the Nazis would come walking every few days looking for him, and they would literally walk on top of him in the garden, and he knew at any point that if the garden hose was kicked out of his mouth that it was curtains. And so he talks about the incredible fear he had being buried in that garden. But then when he came back to the States and started his own business, he said now he really understands fear. And so, you know, the thing is that, you know, a lot of the things that they say works for the big companies, you know, it never really worked for the big companies either. They just didn't know how to measure it. But in a small business, you can create measurables that happen immediately by changing behaviors. And so what I love working with you know, why I love working with small and mid-sized businesses is you can make a rapid and measurable impact right away by really challenging the beliefs that they've been operating on that they think were kind of textbooks. So some of the myths, Dan, would include, you know, people think it's all about pay. And yet when you look at the research about that, it's just not, and it's very clear. Now, that said, if the pay is way too low, then it's an issue. But what people really respond to is they want a workplace that, number one, stimulates them and gives them an opportunity to grow. They want an opportunity. They want a workplace that creates in them a passion for something extraordinary. It kind of like ignites that extraordinary element within them that has a vision of something great that they're up to. You know, I do a lot of work in the financial institution world, and I always say to the bank CEOs, you know, if you go to a teller and say, this year we're going to have a return on assets of 1.8, they are not going to do backflips for you to make that happen. But if instead you go to a teller and say, listen, every parent who walks in here, I want you thinking about how you'll help them make sure that those kids go to college. And every couple that walks in here, I want you thinking about how you're going to assist them to make sure that they retire with financial independence so they can have some fun together. And now you've won the hearts of people. And so part of it's learning to speak the language of what ignites them. Another really important part is to create a workplace that's devoid or at least minimizes the amount of dysfunctional behaviors. And, you know, I always say that, you know, we learned our behaviors in the fourth grade, and many people really never move beyond that. And they bring that into the workplace, so they have no idea oftentimes how to work through a conflict, and so they pout and they throw fits and they gossip and they have excuses and they whine and there's all those behaviors that are just so destructive. And they don't understand that if they come together in a meeting all in one place and make decisions and say, okay, from this point on, no more excuses. You blow it, you go up to someone and you say, I blew it. I mean, I really blew it. And, you know, my name is Tom, and I blew it, and you guys can count on me to make sure that I change something so that this won't happen again. You know, that's a relationship of someone who earns trust, as opposed to I blew it, hopefully no one will catch me, or I know they know I did it, but I don't need to say anything about it. You know, people don't have skill sets for those basic things about how to clean up your messes when you blow it, thinking that, you know, we expect them to be perfect, and we don't. They're going to make mistakes, but they've got to know, in that particular instance, you know, how to clean that up and move on. And there's so many other workplace issues. Dan, I think the worst of all, the biggest culprit of all of them, is the gossip. And I was just talking to an executive team today, and it almost makes you want to tear up when you hear some of these stories of what employees make up about their managers and their leaders. And we kind of brought it up for discussion and said, okay, so what are the things? And it's like, well, I always hear things like, well, I could never say that to management. And they're like, I'm begging them, tell me. But it's the game that people play so that they can be the victim and the martyr. But worse than that, it's the gossip of the things they make up. So here's what's going on in the business, really. And, you know, when you're an employer, you're dealing with people who are not performing, and that is the reality of it. Now, people who aren't performing, as you probably know, Dan, and as I'm sure everybody on this line knows, they really work hard to endear the other people to them because they know they're not performing, and so they just keep thinking, well, if I'm everybody's friend and all I do is complain about this place, then if they get rid of me, then at least I can say, well, you know, that was such a horrible place to work, I had to leave. Or, you know, if I just make these things up, they're going to be so busy covering themselves on the stuff I make up and the gossip I create that they're never going to be on to me. And so, you know, the gossip happens at all levels. It completely takes leadership's ability to lead away because now everybody's looking at you like you're crazy and you're mean and you're awful, and they have no idea. Hey, you just caught that guy embezzling, for goodness sakes. They have no idea the kind of things that you go through on a daily basis that you uncover, that you have to deal with, but the things that are made up are destructive.
Really kind of violates the trust, too, doesn't it?
It violates the trust, and it makes for an unsafe work environment. I always say that you may as well just bring baseball bats and beat the heck out of each other, because when it's all over with, you know, you can repair from that. But when someone, you know, let's say, Dan, that I want to hurt you, so what I'll do is I'll make something up about you, and I'll go talk to Julie, and then I'll talk to Tom, and then I'll talk to Jody, and of course, every one of them doesn't know what to believe, and so in some way I've hurt each of those three people. Those three people now have less self-confidence because they've been tapped into this whole thing, but they didn't know how to say, man, looks like you got to go talk to Dan. If you got an issue with Dan, go talk to Dan. They didn't know how to be a grown-up about it either. And, of course, Dan, you know that we're talking. At some level, you got a sense for it. And so now you know you can't trust me, and you know that you can't trust them. And so there's all this icky thing. And, you know, it's interesting. They now have – I recently was doing some research what some of the scientists have been proving about what happens to people's energy fields. And, you know, when you say something negative about someone, you hurt their energy field, you hurt your energy field, and you hurt the energy field of the people who are within earshot or have heard it. And so when you think about it, life on an energetic level, when you're sucking energy dry of people, it takes the fun right out of it. And so, you know, it's all those kind of behaviors where when people understand, now we've got a code of conduct, now we know how we're going to play in the sandbox when we come to play, and now we know that if I break those rules in the sandbox, that even if my manager doesn't see me, everybody else in that sandbox who saw it now knows that it's their job to call me on it and say, don't you do that, don't you hurt our culture, don't you hurt other people. We have a code here, and we're not breaking the code. And when that happens, that's when you know that you're on the way to having a very, very healthy organization, not just culturally, but that is the stuff that transforms the top line and the bottom line.
Wow. Roxanne, what would you say, what really works when it comes to employee engagement?
Okay, well, one of the things that that I like to communicate to businesses and business owners is that it's not often what we think it is that needs to be done. So, for instance, you know, we work with a lot of organizations, and they say, oh, we need sales training. And then they get sales training, and they find out that they're in a much worse place because it really had nothing to do with sales training. They may need a sales skill or two, but what they really needed was to engage people's hearts and make that happen. And so I have a philosophy that when you start with a basic thing and take it to greatness, I use this analogy of, you know, first we're going to learn how to crawl, and we're going to learn how to crawl impeccably. No one's going to crawl better. We're going to be at 100% in crawling. Then we're going to stand up and try to take a first step. And once we take that first step and we've mastered that, now we're going to start walking. We're going to get impeccable at walking. We're going to be the best walkers. And once we do that, then let's get running. And so, you know, what people don't understand about employee engagement is that you really have to take things piece by piece by piece and bring one piece to a state of extreme excellence. This is going to tell my age here, Dan, and this is kind of frightening to think about this, but when I was really, really little, I remember watching Ed Sullivan. Do you remember that?
I do.
Maybe you're too young, yeah. But I remember watching the guy with the plates, and he'd put the plates on the one stick, and he'd, you know, toss it around, and then he'd get the next one going, the next one. He'd always run back to the first one. And I was always thinking about that, about, you know, running a small business is exactly that. And so when you're going to have an employee engagement breakthrough, first of all, you have to have one plate that goes up, and you got to spin it and spin it and spin it and spin it, and you got to get it in a perfect, perfect spin. And so we call that a rollout. So, for instance, we do this thing called a kick-butt kickoff, where we come into a business and we do an all-employee event. And it's not uncommon. In fact, it's extremely rare if it doesn't happen 100% of the time. Then not only do they have a pretty extreme breakthrough, but it's such an extreme breakthrough that the next day customers literally will come in and ask repeatedly, what just happened here? What just happened here? What just happened here? And what just happened there was we got them to get that they own the joint and that they're in charge of blowing that customer away every time, and that, you know, life gives to the givers and takes from the takers, and the world has a perfect accounting system. And that if you want your life to work, you can't be sitting there thinking, oh, I give a little bit of work and they give me a paycheck. People who have that mindset never have joy in life and they never create great money. And so we get them to get that you know, there's 6 billion people on the planet. Nobody cares about you. You're here to go create a great effect for other people around you. And that's the true path to joy. And so, and you know, this is a Reader's Digest version, Dan, so I'm sure it sounds kind of trite when you just hear this piece, but the formula works beautifully in that they really, you know, I get them nodding their heads going, yeah, I get it, I signed on for work on the first day, I thought it was going to be great, I was planning on doing great things in this organization, I wanted to be a part of something extraordinary, and then old Bertha over there, she kind of bugged me a little bit, and so I thought if they put up with Bertha, then, you know, I'm just going to give 10% less effort. And now, oh, gosh, Mary, she bugs me, and I think she got a raise when I didn't, and so, you know, now I'm going to cut back my performance even more. And whether they're doing it consciously or unconsciously, I guarantee you there's a whole lot of that going on. And even if it's not the ones who are, like, really dysfunctional and really disengaged, even that little bit makes a huge impact in terms of the results that you can get.
Now, you know, you talked about the energy, and you can't see electricity, you can't see the wind, and you can't see the energy. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, because just as you were mentioning that people walked in and said, what happened here, what changed? I've seen it as well, where in some of the stores that have done a great job with this, where they, one fellow was telling me his mom came in, and she looked at him and she says, something's different. What is it? What changed? So that energy, that is very real.
We've all walked into those businesses, Dan, where you can just cut it with a knife. It's just like, oh, somebody just had a fight, or somebody doesn't like somebody else here. Or I remember walking into a bank one time, and when I first moved to Minneapolis, and you could tell these people just hated each other. I mean, and no one was having any fun. I thought, why would someone leave their check here? It just doesn't sound like a place you'd want to do business with.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this: How can managers get infinitely more out of their employees?
Well, this is about a 3-day project to kind of begin to explain this, but let me give you a little bit give you something to begin with. One of the things that the managers can do right away is to deal with the people who have a bad attitude. I apologize, my throat just kind of got gunky here. And what I mean by that is, you know when someone is has a behavior thing that needs to change, like so-and-so just did a typo, you know, that's bad, or so-and-so doesn't know that when they ring the register for such-and-such, they have to give, you know, and they get this coupon, they have to do a discount in that way. I mean, that's a whole different kind of request. But you have those people who are messing with your brain. They're the ones who come in every day, they'll smile, they'll pretend as if they care when you're around watching, but you just know that they're on the other side of the fence. And, you know, I raised a lot of teenagers. We had four of our own and also raised three exchange students, so I know a lot about manipulation because when they're in their teenage years, they master that whole concept. And when someone is messing with your brain, if you're trying to coach them, so let's say, Dan, that you've just got a bad attitude, but let's say that your bad attitude shows up as you coming late for work, and so I say, Dan, you know what, we need you to work on time, and you go, yeah, well, I have this problem. Well, Dan, what will you be doing to make sure that problem doesn't happen again? Well, you know, whatever, I'm going to try and see if I can do whatever. You are getting nowhere fast, and you know it because it has nothing to do with being late. It has everything to do with, let me show you that I'm in charge and I'm going to make your life a living hell. And people, you know, at some level, you know, if you've seen I've been reading a lot of books on rewiring the brain over the last year. I think I've probably read about 16 of them. I'm a little bit intrigued with that topic. And, you know, if you really get how some people who were raised in dysfunctional families really become very addicted to drama and they can't get enough of it. And so if everything's going great, they got to go mess things up because otherwise they have no sense of comfort in their life because they don't know how to operate in any way other than with craziness. So let's say that you're messing with me, Dan, and I've just about had it with that. And so what I recommend is one thing that you can do is you pull someone aside, and you pull them into a place that's quiet where no one else can hear the conversation or see the conversation. And you sit down with them, and you know that this entire conversation really isn't going to go much beyond 30 seconds. And here are the four elements of what I call the conversation. What I would say is, Dan, I am so excited about where this team is going. My sense is that you don't share that excitement, and that's okay. But if this isn't your thing, you've got to go find your thing. Okay, now what have I just done here? Four elements of that. I first of all said, Dan, I'm so excited about where this team is going. Now, why did I say that? Because what I'm letting them know is, Dan, we're going, with or without you. The happy bus is at the bus station. We're loaded up. We're about to take off. You can choose now whether to get on or you can choose to get off. But you know what? You need to choose because if we're not making you happy, you got to do something else. So step one is to let them know, get out of denial. You know, we're going places. Okay. Number two is my sense is, and this is a very important part. My sense is doesn't state any facts. Doesn't say so-and-so told me. Doesn't address some behavioral issue. All I'm saying is my sense is you don't share that same excitement. Because inevitably they will say, well, why do you say that? I don't know. It's just my sense. Well, did somebody say something? I don't know. It's just my sense. Well, really, I mean, what's going on here? Is somebody picking at me about something? You know what? It's just my sense. I hope I'm wrong. And the reason that you want to stay in my sense is because the really crazy making employees who really want to make your life nuts will begin to manipulate you like crazy at that point. And if you hook onto that one, they are taking you down. You will not come out ahead in this conversation because what they're looking for is evidence so they can tell you why the evidence is wrong. This has nothing to do with evidence. When someone has an attitude problem, you just feel it. Now, if you're wrong, in that rare, rare, rare case that you're wrong, great. All you say is my senses, did you share the excitement? And I could be wrong. I hope I am. And if I am, great. We don't have to ever talk about this again. But you know, what I need to see is I need to get a better sense that you're on this bus. And the next third stage is to say that's okay. The reason you want to say that's okay is because you want to let them know you are not going to fight them on this one. whatever they decide. It's their choice, because when it takes away the ability to fight, oop, the drama addiction has nowhere to go. Now it's like, oh, great, whatever they do, they're going to be happy. So if I stay, they're happy. If I leave, they're happy. I may as well, you know, now I can have a choice. And then the last part is to let them know that that you're stepping into their shoes and caring for them. And if you're not right for them, they really got to go find a place that's right for them. And that's really an important stage. Now, let me tell you, when you know that your team members are having that conversation with other team members, now you've got a workplace that rocks. Because as a leader, you're the last one to see who's messing with everybody else. You're the crazy makers are very, very sneaky. and so you'll get a sense that something's wrong with you, and won't be able to wrap your arms around it. And so that's one example of one thing you can do as a manager to, you know, kind of pull more out of people and let them know. Now, I will tell you that, you know, after we do a kick-butt kickoff, we'll always have people who come up to me before and say, oh, you know, if you get Julian, if you can win her over, I'll eat my hat. And 9 times out of 10, by the end of this process, she's in. And what's amazing about that is when she comes back to work the next day, now all that negative energy that she's been using to create dysfunction and take over the break room and make it into training central on how to hate this company and how to shoot holes in your manager and make them miserable, now all that energy that they've used to go create messes because they were a leader, they were counterproductive to your leadership. Now they rechannel that energy, and they oftentimes become your best performer. And I know how crazy this sounds, and I know you don't believe me at this point, but I will just tell you I see it every day I do one of these. I see not one, not two, but at least three people who, when they go back over that fence, they really get it.
Wow. I've heard you talk about challenges, though, with superstars in an organization. Can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges that people encounter? I know in our industry we have every store seems to have a few superstars, one or two that are so critically important. But then we find that they feel like they're above the rules, and so that poses challenges to this. How can you give some tips on how, or some thoughts on how to deal with something like that?
One of the things, one of the pieces that we do in a kickoff is we get them to all agree that they're all going to live by the same rules. And everybody. And so I'll ask, you know, so who's in charge of making sure that everybody does this? And everybody goes, I am. Great. Okay. And then what I do is I find the ones who are you know, still have their arms crossed and are kind of rolling their eyes. You can kind of see they're not going to play this game. And so I'll point right to that person. I'll say, okay, what if Dan is not playing full on tomorrow? And he's rolling his eyes and he's crossing his arms or whatever he's doing tomorrow. And, of course, at this point, Dan stops rolling his eyes and crossing his arms. And he's showing you all these behaviors that he's not going to care and he's not going to show up fully and he's not going to make a big difference for customers and he's going to, you know, work against you in a lot of things. What are you going to do? And they're all like, we'll talk to him. We'll take him on. And there's nothing like a group dynamic. I mean, peer pressure works beautifully for teenagers for messing up their lives. For adults, used productively, it's a very powerful tool. And so when you get them to understand, listen, we are an organization that's going places, and the only way that we go there is that everyone is 100% stand for all the ground rules that we set. So if we say we're gonna answer the phone this way, by God, we're going to answer the phone that way. And if we say we're going to greet customers in this way, that's how we're going to do it. And if we say, you know, this is how the presentation of the product is on the shelf, without exception, we're going to figure that one out. But also, here are the ground rules about how we handle excuses. This is the ground rules about how we handle whiners. This is how we handle victims who are blaming people in other departments. But whatever the ground rules are, we created them all together here. And since we created them, guess what? Now everybody who was a part of the creation of them, you've now bought in, but you are now 100% in charge of making sure that everyone here abides by those.
that's gonna put some of our owners and managers in a position where it's important that they enforce the rules.
Yeah.
That's a
hate that part, huh?
That's a challenge.
Well, let's talk about that. So let's say you got this superstar who afterwards is still kind of rolling their eyes and whatever, you know, and they have the conversation. Now, I will tell you, we had one organization that before we did the kickoff, they had been to one of our boot camps where we kind of teach these principles, but we always tell them don't have that conversation until we do a kickoff because, you know, 99% of them step in at that point, and so let's have them stepped in before you start having the conversation with them. Well, what happens at that point is what happened with this particular organization is the CEO, he let go three of his top, not three of his top three producers for his company. He let go in the same day before we did the kickoff. And I said, oh, man, I wish you would have waited. Couldn't you wait a week or two? Because I thought, oh, man, we are just going to go backwards and they're going to hate me and the results of this organization is going to go down, down, down. But I'll tell you what happened. We did the kickoff, and the results went up, up, up. And in fact, they paid for a full, like, three-year program in the first week on one deal. And then they went out, like, the next week and did it all over again. And they've just been moving and moving and moving. And I'll tell you, I learned more about courageous leadership from this guy down in Louisiana than I have ever met from anyone, because this guy just said, nope, we don't tolerate this. Got to go. And what he lost by losing his top three producers, he gained in the spirit of everybody else who said, thank you, thank you, thank you for taking care of that stuff. We were tired of putting up with that garbage. Thanks for making them go bye-bye.
Wow. Takes a spine.
Yeah, we all have to grow one of those at some point, yes?
Yeah, yeah. For some of the people who came on a little bit late, maybe missed your intro. I've been telling people I'm so grateful that you've agreed to come to our event in Orlando in February. And when we were talking, I think you mentioned that you had some fond memories of Independent Pharmacy, and you were excited to come help us. I don't know if that's something you care to share with the group or not, but let me ask you how would you best describe what some of the things the folks can expect in Orlando when you do your workshop. But before you do that, I should tell you what I've told people about you.
Okay.
Prior. For those who may have come on late, obviously Roxanne is a best-selling author on the subject, written many books. As I mentioned in the intro, spoken to over 1,100 audiences. You are a dynamo in the financial industry, and outside of the financial industry, what you've done work with? What other kinds of groups?
Well, I think I probably haven't missed too many different industries throughout the 20 years I've been doing this. I was kind of the queen of tires for some time, and did a lot in technology. But you know, have just, you know, my first job out of college, Dan, I started off as a commercial lender, and I made loans to all kinds of different businesses. And I remembered at that time being able to walk into a business and kind of go, oh, I know how to make this better. Oh, I know how to make that better. And because I saw the financials, you know, of such a multitude of businesses throughout every day, and I got to see, here's how they play, and here's the results they get, and here's how this one plays, and here's the results they get, and here's how this one plays, and here's the results they get, my intuition began to really grow about, oh, I know how to get this company turned around. I know how to get that company turned around. And so, you know, I really began to watch what really works, which I found to be very different than the stuff that you read in many of the books that are out there about what really works in businesses. And I think, Dan, a lot of the work that you guys do is very much in alignment with the concepts that we have about, you know, stepping out and being creative and having great value far beyond, you know, what you're charging, so that you can charge more. You know, really being a stand, going after top customers, all those kind of things are just so important. And so, you know, I find that across all industries, the same principles apply.
that was what I was looking for, is throughout, regardless of the industry, it's the same concepts, same principles that work across the board then,
mm-hmm.
is what you're saying. All right. Well, I'm actually going to defer that question on what folks can expect. What I'd really like, one of the things that we're dealing with in this industry is mail order. Mail order is a big problem. And so I wanted to ask you, what are some of the things independent pharmacists can do to, some of the stuff we have a very little control over, what can we do to recapture market share that we're losing to mail order pharmacy?
Well, what I teach our clients is play the game you can win. And so you've got to be a historian. You've got to be a researcher. You have to know what's working. You have to know what the trends are. And so, I don't pretend to know more about your industry than you guys do. But let me give you an example. If I were coming in from an outsider based upon some trends that I see happening, you know, mail order, I mean, how are you going to fight that? I mean, that's just kind of a brutal one. That said, it's time to reinvent your game. And hanging on to your old game is probably going to get you into a big mess. And so, you know, if you look at, I just recently saw somewhere that people spend more in alternative medicine than they do in traditional medicine. I thought, okay, now there's a trend that pharmacies should be paying attention to. And so, you know, how do you have people walking in and have them figure out how to buy their Ayurvedic herbs or whatever? And you know, I'm not supporting these things. I don't even know if you can legally sell these things, okay? But what I'm saying is that you must pay attention to the trends of what's working right now. And you got to get on that horse, and you have to not just get on that horse and offer products. The money is never made in the product. The money is always made in the experience. It's the one place where you can compete and win. So, for instance, since we know that alternative medicine is hot, and we know that people are really starting to talk about health consciousness as opposed to just medicines, you know, why not have all kinds of things within your pharmacies where, you know, you have one day where it's like, okay, here's the chair massages, and the next day where it's like, okay, you know, here's somebody coming in and teaching about acupuncture, and they get a free coupon on whatever, and you create an alliance with an acupuncturist to do whatever. And again, I don't know legally if you can do these things. I'm just, you know, giving you ideas about how to think about opportunities. And so as a result of be thinking about the kind of things that people want to buy, because when they come into a pharmacy, they don't want just medicine. They want health. And I really think that trend is going to be much, much bigger in the future. And I think that, you know, when you wrap that into another very important principle that we teach our clients, is that if you study all industries and you find out what works in terms of growing a business and growing it profitably, the leader in every market within an industry has one thing that's most predictable to be in common. They're perceived as being the expert. And so, you know, somehow you need to create that aura that you're the expert on information about health, which is very different than slugging products. And so, you know, that's the name of the game. And so how do you do that? You know, do you work with the home health agencies to send them certain information? Do you have a targeted list of the top, you know, 100 customers that get health information all the time? Do you create alliances with the hospitals and the alternative medicines and whatever, and work with their lists and send information? And then along with that information, there happens to be something, not even just a coupon. I think, you know, coupons, you can coupon yourself right out of business. But maybe to have some free things that have very little cost to you but have a huge perceived value, like come on in for a chair massage, you know, buy this henna hair color or whatever and you get a free hair massage or a free back massage. You know, whatever it is, to create talkable experiences and make your organization a community center as opposed to just some place that people come when they have a headache and they need to buy an aspirin.
What? I can hear smiles all the way to Toronto, Canada, all the way down to Arlington, Texas, where to California and Virginia, where our coaches all are, smiling about just hearing you talk about those things. For those people who are listening who are members of PDS, I actually have not shared some of the programs with with Roxanne that we've been doing, it just so happens one of them happens to be a mini day spa where we do have massages and we have oxygen bars and things like that.
I would show up for that. That's a great idea.
It is all about the experience, which is one of the reasons actually how we got hooked up with the Disney Institute to begin with. You're right. It's never about the product. We have over 140 people on the call tonight, right now, and from all over the country, and they all sell the exact same thing. There's no difference in anything that they sell. And you're right. What makes them different is the experience that they create for their customers, certainly not the products. So, Patty, I could hear you smiling from. let me ask you though that today happened to be. I want to kind of address the elephant that seems to be all around us. Today happened to be a super fantastic day on Wall Street, but it hasn't been so super fantastic for the last few weeks. Why do you think the recession is beneficial for many companies?
I'd love a good recession. A recession is when people who know what they're doing pull ahead of their competitors, because people freeze up. What we find is that, and this is again across all industries, the first two things that get cut when times are tough are the highest return on investment areas. Anybody want to guess what those are? Dan, maybe you know off the top of your head. Well, I'll just tell you. The top two areas that get cut, happen to be the highest return investment areas, are training and marketing, which, of course, when you look at the research about, what's going to pull you out of this thing and what's going to really create massive results at the end of it, it's training and marketing, but done in very non-traditional ways. Because most training isn't very effective and most marketing isn't very effective, but when you know how to do those two things, you really pull ahead of the competitors in a huge, huge way. So I know we Dan and I know someone in common who just gave me a statistic the other day, and he had said that there are still $47 trillion of defaults yet to hit. So I don't care that Wall Street is up. We have not hit the bottom on this thing yet, but if you research – and this is a really worthwhile thing for the historians on the line, or those who are profit motivated to become historians, to find out what the companies that do the best in recessions and depressions are doing. And from the research I've done, I found out a couple things. One is that they market to the wealthy. Okay, so that's really, really important, is that they market to the wealthy. The other important thing is that they only have the high performers on their team. That they really, and that they go out and get the very best high performance. This is a great time to not have to put up with some of the people who aren't performing, and to instead go after people that bring massive results to the organization. And so that creates a huge opportunity. But recessions are when people really need you. But you got to be thinking about, what do they need during recession? How do we stand out during recession? Because these can be just great times to. You know, when you're competing against the big pharmacies, all they really got going for them is pricing. And that can only go so far. But, if you're targeting the wealthy and you're creating all these additional things, and you can create much better margins on those things, then you don't have to really care too much if there's a recession going on. It can be a really, really great thing. And, in fact, you can win over a whole market that otherwise probably just would have went down the street to the big pharmacy.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I know the natural instinct when times get tougher is to pull back. And what when everybody else is pulling back, it's sometimes hard to go against the grain and do the opposite. But that's a great time to step up marketing. When everybody else is cutting back on trying to get new people, that's a great time for people to get a bunch of new customers.
Yeah. It's a great time for that, but it's also a great time, for all of us who are business owners, it's a great time for us to challenge everything we know and really go on a learning path and really learn how to do things at a whole different level. When times are great, people just don't get all that excited about pushing themselves to learn things. Some people do. But when times are tough, now you've got to go get much more resourceful, and you've got to figure out all the things you really don't know that you've just been assuming for a long time, like how do I really hire and how do I really market and how do I really create these experiences and you know, what really works in this area. Now is the time where you have to get you have to do the research. You have to really not afford yourself the mistakes that you had made in the past of guessing. And so this is a great time, pharmacists are, smart people. You obviously you have to have a pretty good grade point to kind of pull that one together. And so being naturally curious people, the challenge is that what got you here won't get you there. So becoming a really good pharmacist has very little to do with being a really good business person. And, in fact, I find that when we work with law firms, and physicians, that oftentimes the brightest people end up being by far the worst business people, because they think they're smart, and therefore who can teach them something? And that arrogance is what I believe to be the absolute kiss of death for a business person, because, as long as we stay open to hearing things, I mean, Warren Buffett says, I surround myself with thousands of opposing viewpoints before I make a decision. We've got to go learn what's another way to think, and what's another way to think, and what's another way to think. I had a CEO at our boot camp not too long ago, and he runs a bank that is, if not the top performing bank in the country, definitely in the top 10. And he's been to our boot camp 3 or 4 times now, and so he came up to me and he said, "You know what? There's some tellers at this one." He said, "This is probably a waste of my time." He said, "What am I going to learn from a teller sitting at my table? I'm used to this being mostly CEOs. But why are CEOs sending their tellers?" I said, "Well, because this stuff works. They get such a high return on investment that they've moved through the whole organization now and they've sent them all through." And he said, "Well, I'm not going to learn anything from a teller." And I said, "You know what? Don't go arrogant on me. Somebody here has some idea that's going to push you forth in a huge way." He goes, okay, Roxanne, I always trust you, so I'll listen. So he comes to me at the end of the first day, and he goes, "You know what? It happened. I got a $2 million idea from a teller." And I went, right on, brother. That's the way to think about it. So when we get arrogant and think we know it all, or when we get kind of restrictive and contracting and kind of go, "Well, there's a recession, so I'm not going to go off to a seminar. I'd have to buy a ticket and whatever. I'll save that money." This is the time to go step up, because that one idea that you can learn can really take you forward.
You said it. I want to repeat it. You talked about, maybe I might be adding this portion, but, with the competition that has a lot of resources that the independent doesn't have in times like this, it's resourcefulness rather than resources. It's flexibility, adaptability, and the advantage that I think our folks have during these types of times is their ability to turn on a dime and make adjustments where the big folks can't. So this is a great time for them to pick up some new ideas, do things differently, and I appreciate those thoughts. It helps reinforce a lot of the things we've been saying, and hear it from somebody who's been so successful with so many industries for so long. It's good to hear right now. But let me shift gears for a moment here. We'll kind of come back to the pharmacies, but I want to talk about your book. Where did the idea for your book, "Thank God It's Monday," come from?
Well, I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking, okay, what was the chicken? What was the egg? And I remembered I had a friend of a friend who was running a financial institution, and he was having some problems. It's just a small little company, and I think they had maybe 70, 80 employees or something, and he just couldn't get it to the level he wanted to get it to, and he just, he had his heart into it, and he thought he had tried everything, and it just wasn't working. And so he asked her, can you get Roxanne to come into my business? And so she asked me, and I said, "Sure, I'd be happy to go in." And the day after we had done this program, he called me and he said, "You've probably never heard a bank president say this before, but I'm giddy." And I said, "You're giddy?" And he goes, "Yeah." He said, "I haven't gotten a stitch of work done all day today because customers have been lined up outside my office saying, 'What just happened here? What just happened here? Why is everything so different?'" And he said, "Nothing could make me happier in the whole wide world." And I thought, well, that's just great. I mean, that's just a really powerful thing. This was the first time I had done a program like that. I had no idea it could have that much of an impact. I didn't know what I had fallen into. And then I remembered saying to him, well, you know what, that's how it's supposed to be. I mean, every environment should kind of be a place where you go, thank God it's Monday, as opposed to counting the days until Friday. And so that's where the concept came up. And then from that point on, for the last 20 years, I've been giving a speech called "Thank God It's Monday," which is like, how do you create that kind of a work environment? And how do you, and if you're one of the team members, how do you create that work environment? And how do you inspire from the inside out and transform your organization and create inspiring results? Dan, I fell into it. Is kind of how it happened.
Okay. Well, let me ask you. The meaning behind the title, Thank God It's Monday.
Well, the meaning is, you can say Thank God It's Friday, too, but there's a whole lot of the population who tolerate Monday through Friday. And that's so unfortunate because, you know, we're all going to come to that stage in our life where we're going to look back and our youthful, vivacious years will be over. And we'll really realize that, for the most part, we kind of wasted them. We kind of did our job, but we didn't go off as kids, we all had those dreams of, and even if they, some people wanted to be a fireman, I don't care what the dream is. The dream was about being heroic and making a difference and taking a stand and having this fame for having done something great or, whatever it is that would be that individual's motivations, that doesn't matter to me. What I find is that people sell out on their dreams. They came the first day of work, their shoes were shined, they were sure they were going to make a difference, and then they just lost it, and they lost who they are. I mean, they really lost who they are. I remember a few years ago I was speaking at a CEO conference, and there was a bank CEO who had asked me if I would stop at his location on the way back to the airport, and I told him I would have a few minutes and I would stop. I would have the cab going, but, I would stop by and just kind of see if I could help him figure out what was going wrong. And so when I got there was just like no energy in this place, and no one was looking up, and no one was making eye contact, and no one was having any fun, and it was just a miserable, miserable place, like most banks, quite frankly, where people just tolerated that environment. And so when I went into his office, I said, Jack, no one's having any fun out there. And he got up and he closed the door. And as he sat back down again, I realized he had a tear rolling down his cheek. And he looked me in the eye and he said, I hate working here. And I said, yes, Jack, it shows. And you know what? As a leader, your own psyche so impacts the people around you. And at some point you got to ask yourself, like, who motivates the motivator? I mean, where does that come from? And so the whole concept of Thank God It's Monday is, I firmly believe that the workplace should be a high-fiving, celebration, affirming, fun, exciting. We know what the game rules are, and we play by those rules, and we know how to win, we know how to score points, and we're keeping track of the points, and we're celebrating as a team, and we're stating the impossible, and then we're going to go, and then we create our path to go make that happen, and we feel good about ourselves with that. I really believe that when we have that in our life, it's so fulfilling that, the weekends are still great. We need time to restore, but, there's something really special about being able to step back up and go, okay, today I get to contribute. Today I get to contribute. Today I get to be who I really am and what I was brought to this planet to do, which is to be magnificent, and by golly, I'm just going to be all over this, as opposed to giving up my energy to a work environment where people just began to sell out. And I'm not going to be a sellout, too. And so it's about, taking a whole group of people and saying, we're not selling out anymore. We're up to the big game. Put me in, coach. Put me in. I want to be a part of something great.
I just went through an emotional roller coaster from being exhilarated about thank God it's Monday, and then, feeling the life sucked out of me when you talked about the fellow didn't want to, the motivator who couldn't stand working there.
Well, we should talk about the truth of that one because, as leaders of organization, who hasn't been there? I mean, if you're really honest, I've been there. you know, I'm like, can I quit? I know I got payroll due, but can I quit? You know, we've all had that point where you can, where it's just so disheartening. We're pushing so hard, and we see this possibility, and we want something great, and we lose our own spirit for it because they want out, you know, and we let them. They want out, and they let them. I'm thinking about this. This guy's name was Jack, too, which is kind of interesting. There's a guy who we had done some work with, and they'd really had a great transformation. And then, you know, as life has it, you know, you take two steps forward and one back once in a while. And they were getting some great results. But about a year later, he called me on my cell phone one night. I'm on the East Coast with my rental car, filling it up with gas, and the phone rings. And he goes, I have to talk to you. And I said, geez, I don't know how you found me or anything, but, you know, what's going on? And he said, I'm going on vacation next week, and I'm thinking about not coming back. And I said, you can't do that. You run the joint. You can't just not come back. And he said, oh, I'm so upset. He said, I've got this woman in this one department, and every time I say I want to do this, she stabs me in the back, and she makes stuff up and whatever. And, you know, when you're the CEO, you can't even defend yourself. You can't say, oh, what the truth is really such and such, because now you look like the fourth grader brought into the deal, and so you just sit and you get the stabs in the back and the stabs in the back and the stabs in the back, and you know what? I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it. And I remember saying to him, well, Jack, if she's doing that to you, she's probably doing it to other people, and don't you think you could look out for them? And so the next day he called me and he told me what happened. He said before they opened, he went in and he'd always been kind of polished when he came to work and in good shape and you know, shaved and with his little suit on. And this particular day he looked like heck and he hadn't shaved. And he pulled an all-employee meeting first thing in the morning and he told them, I need to tell you the truth. I've been thinking about quitting. And I've been thinking about quitting because every time I want to push something ahead, somebody stabs me in the back and pulls away my ability to lead, and I can't take it anymore. I just can't take it anymore, and I want to quit. I don't want to be here anymore, and I've been thinking about this and thinking about it. And then last night at 3 o'clock in the morning, I kind of sat up in bed, and I thought to myself, well, you know what? That's just not okay. That's not okay because they hired me to help lead and to make this happen, and that's not okay. And so here's what I'm going to do instead. I'm not quitting, but what I am doing is I'm saying, if you gossip behind somebody else's back, it's your last day. Welcome to your last day. And he told me, people stood up and gave him a standing ovation. I mean, they were so happy.
Wow.
He had taken his stand from the craziness. And so you never know. I mean, usually if somebody's getting to you, they're getting to somebody else. But you know what? We've all had those days where the tear rolls down the cheek and you just kind of go, can I just throw in this towel and take my toys back out of the sandbox and go find my own sandbox? Isn't there some place on some mountain I can just kind of find a log cabin and get away from humans? You know, we've all been there, and the reality is that we can't let people who want to hurt others take away what we really know that we're here to do, and because we know what we're here to do. And, you know, I think every one of us kind of got called to a leadership position, and I got called to be a business owner, and it's not just to make money. And if we haven't figured this part out yet, you know, and that's one thing I figured out as a lender. Whenever I saw people that were in business just to make money, they never made money. If you're in business to run a great business and wow your customers and get employees who are amazing, the money just kind of barrels on in. And you know, it's kind of like saying I'm alive to breathe. You know, it doesn't work that way. You've got to be about making a difference. And you know, and that comes with challenges, and that's the reality of the story. And I think, you know, here's the best news I can give to everyone on this line. You're not alone. You're just not alone. We've all had those dark nights of the soul where you just want to throw in the towel. But you know what? On the other side of that is something really great. So every lesson comes with a powerful breakthrough behind it.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to give you a quick chance to get a sip of water and rest your throat for a second,
and I
hope I don't embarrass you, but I want to share with people. You mentioned the CEO conference, but Roxanne is known nationally for her ability to create immediate and profound transformations, and CEOs have said that you teach them how to create employees on fire, and the result they say is it's a miracle. And some people insist that it takes 2 years to transform a culture. I know you've said only if you say so. So you talk about if people are ready to witness a miracle before their very eyes, know that it's possible. And you've seen it happen with just a one-day program. I know that some of the results have seen people seen has seen tremendous improvements, doubled their service scores within just a few weeks, and others have seen sales growth increases from 30% to well over 100%. And the real miracle, they say, is how they see their organizations come alive and a more passionate place to work with more focused energy and ironclad systems for integrating strategy, marketing, sales, and service. And I know for a lot of people that it doesn't sound possible, but I guess the only way they'll find out is by seeing it in action in Orlando, I hope. So hopefully people... What's that?
This should be fun.
We are looking forward tremendously. Let me ask you, if we read your book, I know we're going to have, I hope we're going to be able to secure some copies ahead of time of the publishing in time for the people who come to Orlando. What will we get better at if we read the book?
Well, you understand how to have the initial breakthrough. You'll understand that the culture shift is a series of continuous breakthroughs, and that there's a formula, and that the formula has to be run over and over and over and over again, and you have to have enough people engaged in running the formula that the flywheel begins to turn by itself. And you're going to get tools of how to think and how to challenge people and how to talk to people and how to deal with the dysfunctions and but I think most of all, what I hope to accomplish in Orlando is for you to reengage your spirit, that you can have this, and that it doesn't have to be so hard every day, and that it can be just a hoot when you really take a stand for having a workplace that has a magnetic marketing field. I mean, you just, when you walk into a pharmacy and you see people alive and passionate, you know, you want more. You know, I was thinking about, we had a client who was telling us that they have a ice cream store in their neighborhood where people can go and get cones, and one of their customer service standards is that whenever a person leaves, that at least three people will say, "See you tomorrow, see you tomorrow, see you tomorrow." And they said that the first time that they had ever walked into this place, as they're walking out the door, they're like turning their necks kind of in disbelief, like, why do they think I'm coming back tomorrow? How do they know where I'm going to be tomorrow? Why are they saying that? And then so people are kind of like snapping their necks out of joint as they're going toward the door. But when they get to the door, they're thinking, yeah, you know what, I kind of do. I feel really appreciated here. I want to come back. And so this ice cream shop has this booming business. You know, and a lot of little ice cream shops and a lot of little pharmacies, you know, have that vivaciousness when they start, because you have to. I mean, you've got to have something different. You can't compete, and you can't gain the market share unless you have these uniquenesses and this great spirit about you. But then we get a little bit cocky as we've been around for a while, and we start to do transactions, you know, and people come in and they buy something, and we, you know, take their little credit card and we give them a slip of paper, And we thank them and sometimes use their name, and we think that's great customer service, and that's not even the start. And so a lot of companies that think they have great customer service haven't begun to start on the stuff that's really going to create that magnetic marketing where people find you irresistible, and they don't even know why. They feel like they're going to walk down to your place, but, you know, it's Tuesday afternoon, and that's what they do, you know. And so, you know, you become a part of their world. You know, I think a lot about... we always joke in my family about we have a Target not too far from our home, and you know, we're in Minneapolis where it's kind of the home of Target, and I don't know what they do, but every time I go in for a tube of toothpaste, it's usually about an $88 transaction, and I don't know what their little miracle is, but you know what, you got to study that, you got to know it, but you know what, you got to beat them at their game, you got to take it a much bigger level, but you really got to understand marketing and merchandising and value and engagement of people, and because, you know, they can only take it so far, and you can take it about 100 times that, and that's where the real profit machine kicks in, is when you just start playing a whole different game.
Absolutely, great. That's great advice. So I have to ask you, what are energy vampires?
They are those little suck you dry people who, when you come to work on Monday morning and you're all excited about making a difference and you can't wait to get going, and you got your plan for the week and you're ready to go, and no one's gonna bug you this week. You feel like you're alive, and then on Monday morning you walk by that person, and just by being in their energy field, they suck you dry of all your joy and all of your excitement, because they got a game, they got a racket that they're playing. You know, whatever their racket is, whether it's excuses or martyrdom or victim or oh, poor me, and you know, whatever that game is, no matter what you do, they can't be happy. But their happiest, maybe happiness isn't the right word, but they're most satisfied when they're sucking your energy dry. And so if there's happy people around them, they're going to do everything possible to suck dry those around them. And, you know, and every one of us knows exactly who they are. Whenever I say, okay, think of that person in your organization, and you know, you can immediately see it in people's eyes that they just got it. You know, I know who that is, or I know the 10 people who fit that parameter. And so, you know, one of the things I'll do in a kickoff is I'll say, okay, how many of you know that on Monday morning you come in, you get all this energy, and then you walk by this person, and they suck you dry? And I said, give me a show of hands. Who can relate to this? And, you know, 95% of the hands go up. And then I say to them, okay, now let's get honest here. How many of you have been the energy vampire? If you're really honest, at some point in your life, have you ever been the energy vampire? I have, and I raise my hand. And as soon as I do, they start to go, oh, yeah, okay, now we get to be honest. And then I teach them how to recover from energy vampires and what to do with an energy vampire. But first, I got to engage them, because, you know, what's wrong in the organization is everybody thinks that the problem is somebody else. And that's a problem.
Wow.
The problem is all of us.
Right.
All of us. And we all have stuff to clean up on every day. I mean, when I'm in front of an audience, I say, you know, I teach this stuff, and I work really hard to be impeccable with my word on that. And that said, I'm human. I'm going to make mistakes, too, but I do hope that I'm always tuned in enough that if I blow one of these principles that I'm teaching, that I know enough to go clean up my mess right away and say, man, I just blew that. I can't believe I did that. So sorry. I was a jerk, you know, and clean up my mess, as opposed to just arrogantly going on and pretending like nothing happened. Because, you know, we never get perfect, but we've got to be at a pretty high state of perfection on being able to be vulnerable and real about our stuff. And that's when you create a workplace that works. You know, it makes me think about a woman who sent me a letter not too long ago, and she had said that her third grader's teacher asked to talk to her, and she had said that her little Tommy, or whatever his name was, had really changed dramatically in the last year, and she couldn't figure out why he was so much calmer and happier and what was going on. And the woman said, well, you know what, I've been going to these boot camps, I've been going, and we had this kickoff, and I'm just applying these things in my family that I learned to use in the workplace. And I thought, bingo, that's it, you know, that's the thing. And so the bottom line is, businesses transform when their people grow. But when you've got a bunch of people walking around thinking I'm right and they're all wrong, those losers that I work with really bug me, now you get a problem. And so, you know, There's an emotional intelligence testing process that we oftentimes show our clients how to use. And you know, when people have a low self-awareness, they really don't know how they show up in the world. They really don't know that sometimes when they open their mouth, these bizarre things come out, and they're kind of better off to not open the mouth a good chunk of the time. You know, but people even who have that going on, to teach them, so when you do that, will you be open to somebody saying, hey, Tom, when you did that, that really created a mess. Can you go clean that up now? You know, because now you have now you got a team rooting for you. So when you're kind of ignorant about your own stuff, at least people are kind of going, you know, you kind of stunk up the joint there. Can you go clean that? And so, you know, the key is here that the team has to support the other team members, and people have to be able to be honest and deal with the truth.
Well, I know you're right that we're all guilty of it at one time or another. I'll tell you, at a lot of the medical conferences I go to, they could almost be, they almost feel like vampire conventions. I am very excited, though, to introduce you to this group of people. One of the things that we've heard a lot of people who've come in the last 2 years, one of the things they enjoy tremendously is just being around high-energy, positive people who are they're not whining about things that are happening, and but really talking about the things that they're doing and making happen. It's just great to be around high-energy people. So I'm very proud to introduce you to this group. I think you'll be quite impressed with the people that show up. They enjoy it, and I know you'll enjoy talking to them. But they've been on they've been working all day. It's getting a little late. Could we give them some things? What are some of the things that could make a difference that they could perhaps be that they can start immediately?
They could have the conversation with me who's got a bad attitude. They could be vulnerable and tell people, you know what, I need you guys. I need you guys to be thinking at a whole different level. I can't do this myself, and I can't pretend anymore that I can. I need you guys to step up to the plate and find other opportunities to wow our customers and hold each other accountable to things. And so you can have honest conversations. That you can't go wrong with. You can create a culture of appreciation. You can just keep saying, way to go, way to go, way to go, way to go. And when you hear one of your people appreciating somebody else, to make a big deal to appreciate the appreciation. One of the things that we teach is that when you have a base of appreciation where people feel like they both know how to give appreciation, they both know how to receive appreciation, and they have a whole lot of that going on a daily basis, you know, now you can go to them and say, hey, you know, Joe, like, you know, you got this issue here, and his reporting is wrong, and this is wrong, and you got to clean that up, because you have the emotional bank account to go there. And so, you know, some of those basic little things you can get started with right away. There's nothing you have to wait with there.
I think that people get beat up emotionally in so many different aspects of their lives. For them to be able to come to work and be in an environment totally different, it makes them, certainly I'm sure it makes it a place that people want to come to, encourage them to come to work. Okay, so what can we tell, how can we best describe to the folks what they can expect that for your day? You're going to be doing the second day in Orlando, February 5, 6, and 7, so you're going to be the 6, and you're going to be it the whole day. They're good. What can they expect?
Well, that's the good thing. When we have a whole day together, we get to work on what they want to work on. And so so I'm going to come in wide open. I mean, I'm going to have some things I'm sure we'll cover, but I'm going to be wide open, and we're going to find out, okay, what do you need to have a breakthrough in? But I'm going to teach some systems of rollout. I'm going to show you what your role is in making different things happen. I'm going to show you, like, how you measure things, how you celebrate things, how you create a culture of celebration that's drawn to the key initiatives and the key results you've identified. So that everybody knows here's the top five here and here's the top five there, and everything aligns with those. So they know now what the rules of the game are to win. And the list goes on and on and on. But basically, some hardcore roll up your sleeves. Let's not just talk about illusion stuff. Let's talk about, you know, real life stuff. You know, I've been a serial entrepreneur all my life, and having owned quite a few businesses, and my husband owns some businesses. I'm a real fan of the things that work, and I don't have much time for theory. And so we're going to roll up the sleeves and create some mechanisms that you can take back and use to create some results right away.
So we're not going in like a typical pharmacy CE program where we're in lecture mode. We're going to actually get some liftoff, and so that if they bring some team members with them, they can actually get some good work done, so that by the time they get home, they have some momentum. Would that be a fair expectation?
I think so, and I think we're going to have some fun.
Okay. Well, that
in fact, I can promise that.
All right.
Yeah, you know, I'm a firm believer about keep light about life, you know. It's just, you can't take this thing seriously. You don't come out of it alive anyway, you know. Just keep it light.
I like that. I'm going to have to remember that. Okay. Well, I'm going to, I don't know if you have any other final notes, any other comments, give you a chance to catch your breath for a moment and let people know if they haven't signed up or they want more information. We have a lot of people on the call who aren't PDS members also. Want to welcome you to join us at the Disney Conference. This is CE programs that have never been done. This topic has never been done in this industry, Roxanne, much less a three-day workshop on it. And so this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I think it's perfect timing with what's going on in the in the business world right now. Perfect time, the exact right medicine at the right time for businesses that, that want to grow and certainly take off even. They can get more information if they go to our website, pharmacyowners.com/Disney, and you can read read up about it. You can get the brochure, and they can start signing up. We are doing early sign-ups, and that we're offering people, if they come to this event, for every ticket they buy, they can bring a companion for free with them. So that we're trying to encourage them to bring as many team members as they can so that they have their own people that they can be working with as well and accelerate the implementation of a lot of these great ideas.
I'd like to comment to that, too, as you're saying that, if that's okay. One of the things that has been researched in the world of training in terms of what sticks when people go back from a conference is that when you come as a group and there are several people, the amount of application goes up exponentially. And so when people come to our conferences, we really beat them up before they come, if they sign up by themselves. And it's usually about five or six people still do it that way. And at the end, they always go, oh, man, I should have had a team here. Because you learn so much that you can take back right away. And so I think that's a brilliant strategy is to have them have that companion offer like that.
Yeah, I know we've only scratched the surface. And I appreciate you sharing some information. There's just so much we can do. But hopefully give them some things to think about and get them fired up about coming, because I'm the people who are on the line have been to our previous events. We've gotten tons of comments about how fantastic they are. I can't tell you how much more excited I am about this year than the previous 2 years. Perfect timing and great lineup and a whole different format than we've done before, and I just feel very fortunate that the timing is such that we got lucky, I know, with your schedule that we were able to get you to join us. So I want to thank you in anticipation. We're all looking forward to it. We did have a couple questions, so I thought if I could before we let go. If anybody wants to submit a question, can you stay a few more minutes, Roxanne?
I sure can.
Okay. One of the questions submitted is, what happens at the kickoff?
Oh, there's a lot going on there. In the afternoon of a kickoff, it's designed for the managers, anybody who manages anyone, and we teach them a whole different way of managing people. And it's a really simple way of coaching and creating expectations and coaching to the expectations and dealing with people who are pushing against you and also, you know, how do you create energy and aliveness in the organization so it has that celebratory, fun feel. You know, so many of us have the Gen Ys and the Gen Xers as employees, and, you know, there's so much written out about them where the boomers think they're just awful employees. They just don't get it. They don't have the social skills. They don't know how to dress. They don't know how to write. They don't know grammar. And I mean, there's so many complaints about that. And yet, you know, many of them can really be engaged very beautifully, but it's a different game than what engages the boomer. And so in the afternoon session where we teach some of the basic principles of some really breakthrough management ideas, that really, you know, none of the stuff was I ever read about in a textbook anywhere. These are all things that I kind of came up with by going, well, let's try this compared to this, and let's try this compared to this. So that's what we do in the afternoon. And then in the evening, it's an all-employee event, and anybody and everybody attends. And in that event, there there are three profound things that happen. We're going to show you and give some examples of it when we do the piece down in Florida. And but we have them create a vision of what extraordinary looks like, which, you know, sounds like one of those academic crazy kind of things. But I will tell you, the way that we do it and how we do it, I don't know anybody else who does it this way. In fact, I have a whole different definition of what a vision is. But we show you how to create one that gets everybody going, let's go get that. Get out of the way. We're going. And so we show you how to do that. We show you how to create your customer service standards in all these different areas and hold people accountable and do rollouts and all those kind of things. And then lastly, we get them to make agreements about how they treat each other. But I will tell you that, you know, we've had a lot of organizations who they went out and they went, okay, now you know how to do this. I'll go do this ourselves. And there are a million little nuances that must be done along with that. And I'll give you just one example. Like, let's say that I'm asking a question of a group. And I'm asking them for, you know, how many of you are, you know, fully committed to, from now on, when you're greeting customers, always have at least three people have a vivacious greeting that happens within the first 9 feet of that person walking in that door. And at the time that I ask that question, I'll have my eyebrows up, and I'll be nodding my head, and I'll have my arm up in the air, and I'll be looking around the room. If there's anybody who doesn't raise their arm, boom, I'm on that. Now, it's that and a million other of those nuances that make the magic happen. So it isn't really about what they learn. It's about getting them to throw their heart over the bar. And we'll be explaining a lot more of this down there about how that all happens and how you do it. You know, we've been talking to Dan about creating some video pieces so that, and getting you know, taught to be able to do some of this within your own organization if you have a smaller organization, because, you know, nothing's more frustrating than when you have like 5 employees or 10 employees and it's like, okay, I can't bring in a whole thing, but I got to move something ahead. So we're still in development of all that, so that there'll be ways to create a great result, you know, regardless of your size and different kind of things. But, you know, part of it is understanding what has to go along with this, and then what happens afterwards. What are all the pieces that come behind it? Because the kickoff creates this huge shift, but then you got to keep it going. Now they're expecting great things, and they're expecting greatness, and they want a great work environment, and they want to get better and better and better. And so now you got to know what to do next as well.
Okay, great. Maybe at this hour of the night, I'm slurring my speech because I've had 3 requests to repeat the web address. So let me do that again, and I'll do it slowly. For people who are interested in learning more about the Disney event, you can go to www.pharmacyowners.com/Disney. That's www.pharmacyowners.com/Disney. And Like we said, we've only scratched the surface here tonight. There's going to be a lot of good stuff. And, Roxanne, I want to thank you so much for I know you just made it home a few minutes before we went on the air here with this call, so I really appreciate you being here. And thank you very much for all the information this evening. And we are looking forward to February, seeing you in February.
I'm looking forward to it as well. What a lovely place to be in February, too.
Especially, I guess, if you're from Minneapolis.
If you're from Minneapolis, especially.
All right. Well, that takes our time, so I want to thank everybody for being on the call, and we are going to make this available if you want to listen to it again or make it available to anyone else. So I want to thank you. Thank you again. Thank you, coaches, Penny, Shally, Patty, and everyone else on the call. Thank you very much. Have a good evening, everybody.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night.